You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Now I'm a union man, amazed at what I am. I say what I think, that the company stinks. Yes, I'm a union man. When we meet in the local hall, I'll be voting with them all. With a hell of a shout, it's out, brothers, out, and the rise of the company's fall.
Oh, you don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. Till the day I die. Till the day I die.
As a union woman, I'm wise to the lies of the company spies.
And she don't.
Good morning, members. Welcome to the latest edition of Fire Up MUA. My name's David Ball. I'm from the Victorian branch of the MUA. And I'd just like to introduce our fantastic producer, Annie McLaughlin.
Hello.
That's just in recognition of me forgetting you earlier last fortnight, and I apologise again for that, Annie. Now I'll introduce our other great compares, Aaron and Rob. How you going, boys?
None of your business. Don't ask questions. Good, thanks, Dave. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, Dave.
It's been a crazy couple of weeks again here in Victoria. I'm not sure. Victoria, what a weird place to live at the moment.
Yeah, no, I'm glad I moved down. Been wrapped, mate. Yeah, no, it's been nice.
All I saw about Newcastle was the cliffs were all being washed away by the ocean. The town was being washed away. Yeah. At least we're still here.
We're just creating more beachfront. It's beautiful. So working class people can live on the beach, mate. What else would you want to do?
Oh, I said we didn't working class people to deliver it on the beach. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, or beachfront, mate. Property for every working class person. Yeah.
I agree. Beachfront property. Yeah. On the beach.
We used to call that Port Melbourne. Where, of course, all the working class did live for a long, long time. There is still some down there, which is great, but obviously the high rise and developments have taken over a lot of it.
All right.
And one of the, well, I guess just...
Well, you're welcome to your local property show.
just on with that, one of the working class establishments that's been in Port Melbourne for a long, long time is moving out of Port Melbourne, TT Line, moving to Geelong.
And that does that take place? When's that? Is that next year?
I believe they've started selling tickets for September next year.
Yeah, right. So the September next year, we can expect to be... birthing alongside in the newly purpose-built facility in Geelong, right?
Called Spirit Key.
Spirit Key.
Yeah, not Corio Key. It will be called Spirit Key. So that's
where it is, Dave, in Corio Key.
That's right, yeah. Really exciting for the people of Geelong. And I imagine some of the residents in Port Melbourne will be overjoyed at the traffic blocks that will no longer exist, because I think that's been a big problem for them.
Yeah, the infrastructure just wasn't there. I mean, you'd see them lined up, you know, cars, caravans, trucks, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I was going to say miles, but, you know, for quite a long way and for quite a long period of time. So infrastructure was never going to support it there long term, so probably just a bit of common sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Move it down to Geelong where, you know, there's a bit of room down there. And
plenty of room.
Plenty of space.
Plenty of room down your way, Dave.
They're going from, I think, you know, something like a 1 or 2 hectare site to like a 15 hectare site. So... they're going to develop it. People will be able to stay overnight. It should be a great facility. But TT Line, I guess I'd just like to use that as a segue to moving probably to the more controversial part of our fortnight, which is mandatory vaccinations and the impact that that's having on our seafarers on Bass Strait, because not all seafarers on TT Line, Toll and Sea Road, are Victorians.
Yeah, I heard something in I forget one of the webinars I was listening to or talks I was listening
the
to.
Department of Transport, yeah.
That was the one. And they were saying about asking that question last Friday and asking that question around what happens with if you're a Tasmanian and you're... How will all that work? And I don't think
the Department didn't have answers.
The Department of Transport didn't actually have answers to that straight away, and they're going to have to come back around that.
Yeah, and it's not just TT Line. Like some of our members that work here in the offshore and go to Barrows Beach... they come from interstate, that vessel is
registered in some country overseas somewhere. So it's like it's a very complicated situation as to whether or not it's a Victorian workplace, just because it's alongside in Victoria. And I mean, it was probably one that we should have that should have been expected, because we have the same issue when there's safety concerns on vessels, right? So if there's a safety concern on a vessel, it becomes like this multi-jurisdictional vessel, and it depends whether or not there's a person in the crane or a wharfie up the gangway as to whether or not it's covered by WorkSafe Australia, WorkSafe Victoria, NOPSEMA in the offshore oil and gas industry as well.
This is the problems with all the different states having all the different regulations around, you know, in some states you can do this and others you can't, and all the different laws and all the different states. So that's going to continue to create problems, ongoing problems.
It was nice of Mr. Morrison to throw his hands up again and say, not my job, when it comes around to making tough decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. That and quarantine. He's done absolute debacle around quarantine. And
well, that's where we are now.
Mm.
What's happened with vaccinations? Is that the thing you've been dealing with this week?
Certainly, other things.
So the government finally put out on, if it wasn't Thursday night, it was Friday. I think it was Thursday night last week. Yeah. The public health order that mandated vaccination for all authorised workers. And the list of authorised workers it's everyone you can think of, basically.
Yeah.
And that so we got some legal advice around that, which we've been seeking prior to that. And we also sought legal advice after it. And we had a hookup last Friday afternoon with Murray B, with the principals of Murray B around the legalities of the mandate. And it's fair to say the government have done their homework, because they came back with the advice that they went through everything that you could think of, and they answered all those questions. And from a legal point of view, there were no legal avenues to challenge the mandate for those people who might be vaccine hesitant or just are not sure. So the advice was to seek advice from your health professional. But it certainly has been a divisive and contentious issue, it's fair to say.
Yeah, it has been quite a polarising issue I've seen as well, because there's ample amount of people pro it. There's the same amount of people not wanting to, a bit concerned about it. So,
but, you know, the union movement's encouraging people to get vaccinated, and one of the main reasons we're encouraging people to get vaccinated is because of the health workers and the nurses who work on the front line. You know, these people have been struggling through, you know, you think we've had a difficult time during lockdown and COVID. If you're a health worker or a nurse, you've been going to work for the last 18 months, 2 years. You've been wearing an enormous amount of PPE. You've put yourself at risk every day. You've put your family at risk. You've put your friends at risk. And we just want to call out a bit of solidarity to all the health workers and nurses and thank them for the great work they do. And we fully support them and hope that we can create their workplaces to be safe, just like we want our own workplaces to be safe.
And if rolling up our sleeve, showing a bit of solidarity, then it's encouraged for everybody that can do it, that we should. So great work.
You know, the thing about vaccination is that it's been a really big beat up, but, you know, I wonder if it hasn't been a beat up against reality, because when you do actual polling, it's been discovered that only about 0.08% of the population are actually anti-vax. But when you look at the amount of coverage it's been given, it makes you wonder if it's not just there to undermine solidarity amongst workers.
Yeah. And one of the things, just a lot of the questions get asked around how long will that mandate last? And the thing that came out of the Murray B thing was that the public health orders are only in place, they are contingent upon the state of emergency. And right now the state of emergency goes to the 21st of October. It's expected the government will continue to roll that out. But right now they can't roll it out past the 16th of December.
Without a legislation.
Unless they further legislate to extend that state of emergency power. So the mandate is in place, but it is contingent, the advice we get, it is contingent upon the state of emergency powers being in place.
So the legal discussion continues. We will continue to support our workers like we always do, and we just hope that we can get past this moment and get back to fighting for good EAs and good workplace agreements. And
there's plenty of those fights going on, and
one of the biggest
one of the biggest ones that we've mentioned in the last 3 weeks running was Cube and Freo. So those guys are out now for
the 11th week,
more than 70 days. Mathematically 77, hey, I guess. Is that right?
77.
If I don't know how to count, I don't know how much I am losing.
There's 7 days in a week, and 11 weeks make 77.
Yeah, 77.
They're 11 weeks on the grass, and still no closer to getting back in the gate. But the I know talks are continuing, and at the moment, so
I know we always put the snip on for him too. But there's a local Melbourne artist has done a great piece of artwork supporting it, and they can be purchased online. The art goes directly to the Cube Warfies fighting fund as well. So
this is a great piece of art.
I wonder if he'll double up and enter our poster competition with it.
We'll probably get that sent out to all of our members if it hasn't been done already.
Yeah, no, certainly will be in the. It'll be
While you're doing nothing, get that sent out.
And we will send out the details for you to donate to the Cube. Brothers and sisters who are on the grass over there, they need continual financial support.
It's highly unusual in this day. I mean, I say this day, but 11 weeks is a long time to be out. I mean,
absolutely.
In Australia, with the laws the way they are,
extraordinary.
It's really, really difficult to.
Because it's not just it's not about pay. It's about conditions, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
It is about conditions, Annie, and the members over there of.
It's all about a life work balance.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it's about safety on the job, and whilst we're having one fight over in Freo, I know that Cube. Their safety measures up in, I think, Brisbane were to whisk a guy off in the back of a ute.
Yeah, I heard that tonight. Himself, a couple of days ago, actually.
What happened?
I'm a bit unclear on details, but all I know is that there was an injury at site, and their response was just to throw the individual into the back of the ute and whisk him off.
Further
compromising their safety, I would suggest.
Unbelievable. And the blue continues down at Patrick's. Casper, I heard the protected industrial action had to be taken off because of all the high-level cases of COVID in the workplace.
Yeah, so look, it was a decision that was really, really hard to make, but in the finish it was easy because, as you know, we get smacked around anyway. And that's not really a problem for the MUA to be smacked.
What do you mean smacked around?
In the media,
Little Johnny's point, mate.
But we had a positive case, and there was a second one, then there was a third. And I think the numbers reached about 190 in the finish.
Woo!
People fighting at one stage.
That's about a third of the workforce?
No, that's over half.
Over half?
But when we took
that's
the action...
190?
Yeah, mate.
Yeah. I thought you said 109.
No, there was 109 after the second case. Isolating, that's a third of the workforce. And so the decision was made that, look, Patrick's would be, they'd take us to the Fair Work Commission, Section 424. They'd probably win that. And also, I don't think the public are going to give us much sympathy if we're out on, you know, taking action when we've got a third of the workforce isolating due to COVID. I mean, it's just a shit look. And then the union's brand gets damaged as well, so... But
and their chief exaggeration officer, which I really enjoy the title, would have really blown it out of proportion.
Yeah, Michael Jovicic.
We're still waiting for the 40th ship to pull up out of.
But I've got to say that the workforce at Patrick's did not want it to take off, and there was a massive backlash for to the union for taking that action off, and just had to explain to them the reasons why it wasn't something we wanted to do. Or what I wanted to do was just. You know, eventually you're pushed into a corner where it just you have to do it. It's the right thing to do, and so we did that. And but there's been no real movement on the EA. A couple of days ago, there was a hookup with the officials, and we're going to go back and write to the company again and try and get them to move. But some of the stuff coming out of that company's senior management level is nothing short of disgraceful. They wrote to the union, which was an offensive letter, to be truthful. And we'll get a flyer out to the membership there. And hopefully by the end of this week, by the end of tomorrow, we'll have a flyer ready to go around where it sits. The COVID stuff in the workplace, I've got to say, it's just horrific what's happened. You know, members have been forced to isolate. And
no fault of their own, but showing up to work.
But just for going to work. But it's not just that. I mean, it was the mismanagement of the COVID protocols. They had their big note now. They've got five gangs, up to seven gangs working. And they had them all having their lunch in the one room. So
they get the ticket for being the clever clubs, do they?
Bad idea. But the problem with it all is that our members are the ones sitting at home, being forced to use their
own leave,
forced to use your own leave to pay yourself to sit at home for mismanagement of,
because it's been mismanaged by the company.
So it's something I've taken up with Pedro Massini, our the Victorian and Tasmanian legal officer, to see what options we have available to us to challenge Patrick on the front of the reason why so many members have been forced to isolate is their mismanagement, and they need to take some responsibility for that.
Oh, and having to use your sick leave and your leave to pay for something that's actually a part of the pandemic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then but just to add, you know, further insult to injury, though, you know, they're able to get a exemption from the Department of Health and Human Services about being able to come back to work after 5 days if you were double vaccinated and you tested on day five and you got a negative, you can come back into the workplace with parameters, supposed parameters around where you could go in the workplace, but then you'd have to go home and you were subject to the normal isolation up to 14 days and you would need to be tested on day 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. But you could go to work as long as there was virtually no crossover with other people, all this sort of stuff. But if you could go back to work doing the company a favour virtually and then become a close contact again in 2 days and be back in using your own leave. I mean, it's
insanity. The government's let us down there.
The government's let us down there. But Patrick's just wanting to have their cake and eat it too.
Oh, it's just, you know, my view is, and I've written it to the manager there, and I said, you know, you just want people to come in, get as many people in, as many bodies as you can in the joint, churn out as many boxes as you can, and if something happens, well, home you go and just use your own leave while you're home. It's just I think the attitude, and we've taken it to a national level now, it's just disgraceful. I think it's disgraceful the way the members are being treated there.
Yeah, certainly it is.
Really tough.
We could go on. But it's just, yeah. It really is. I really, you know, people ring and they talk to you and you just... You agree with them, but it's not really given them much solace out of it all, because you think, well, that's all right, I agree with you, but what are you doing for me? And there's only so much, and that's why to go down and look at the legal pathways that we have available to us, we will, we're doing that.
Yeah.
But that's not really where we want to be. We'd rather Patrick put their hand up and say, you know what, we mucked this up, or even better, use another term, and say, and we're going to assist our workforce for it. But No, they won't own up to any mismanagement. So that's where we're at.
And, you know, 6 to 8 weeks ago, I think we were, you know...
Sorry,
there wasn't many positive cases of COVID in any of our workplaces. And now I think the majority of them have had one or two or more. And one place that's had plenty is VICT, Aaron.
Yeah, there has. There's been a few there. Stopped the terminal for a period of time because, like Patrick said, it was well over half of the workforce in isolation. But they're backing up running now, and they're able to get back to work after consulting with both their delegates and our HSRs and putting in additional COVID parameters that go above and beyond the health orders. So working in bubbles.
We're not here to... pat bosses on the back, but at least at VICT, they shut the place, they got their key people in, their OHS people, got their elected ERC people, and spoke to the union and worked out a plan together to get the place back working in a safe manner.
Yeah, and the systems are working as well, because there was another case that that happened, and only a very much smaller portion of the workforce are required to isolate for the 14 days. So instead of being 100, instead of being almost 100, or I think it was, we got to 93 at one point, there's only five in.
So what's Patrick's refuses to actually work with anybody to get a safe workplace? Is that what's going on?
They're putting in procedures, but they're fixing things up as each thing comes along. You know, something else happens, oh, we've got to stop, we're going to have to change that and fix that. So they're chasing their tail from one situation to the next.
It's
rather than saying, let's just stop and get it right.
Not very clever.
It's just the, you know.
I think...
You've got to see them cranes keep on... Those cranes don't allow to stop any. That's the mentality.
Yeah, look, I don't... You know, again, I'm going to forgive Patrick's a little bit here. What? Because what happened was that... This is my view, is that when COVID first came out, everybody put all these restrictions or
protocols
into place, having staggered smoke breaks, gangs in bubbles, and then they opened up Melbourne and everyone thought we were all right, and when it shut down again, all that was forgotten.
That's what management do, mate. They've got to manage. And that's what they haven't done. They go back and manage.
Yeah, I agree. So we won't let management off. But work safe, and the state government have also, and the federal government have also failed to communicate and educate.
Yep, I agree that there has been a failure.
It's the truth of the matter is that people did get really sloppy about being careful.
There was certainly some fatigue around.
A lot of things have happened. I mean, I think at one stage people were really vigilant. There's only an observation. Yep. This is not an observation. People were quite vigilant about the QR code every place they went into. Eventually we said, you know, we've got to start QR coding. And then people went, now I'm sitting at home for 14 days. I really can't be sitting at home for 14 days.
That's right. So
people do start to, and this is not an accusation or it's just simply an observation of people go, what am I going to do? Yeah. I can't be sitting at home for 14 just because I walked in there, bought a donut and walked out. I would have bought two, but.
You've been buying more than two over lockdown.
Oh, I don't know. I think people are a bit crazy, personally. You know, a pandemic's a pandemic. You know, when the CFMU officers got pushed around, they then got COVID, and then because I did the concrete gang panel, then yeah. I had to go and get tested, and da da da. We all did the right protocols, but interestingly enough. You know how people are grumbling about efficiency of things and all the rest of it? I tell you what, I got my test at 8 a.m. in the morning because I went there straight away, and they sent me a all clear at 5 a.m. the next morning.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I've had it back within 12 hours. So
they are amazing.
I'd avoided getting anything, any tests done for almost the entire pandemic, and in the last few weeks, I had to have like three or four, and they came back within 12 hours or so.
Having said that, I do know a seafarer who was rung up by the Department of Health and Human Services, put into quarantine, told to test every second day, only to be rang back 7 days later and told it was a mistaken identity.
To be fair to the DHH, they are copping a bit of a barrage.
And they deserve it.
They are under the pump. No, turn it up, Dave.
Come on,
they're under
the
pump.
Hopeless.
No, they're under the pump.
They're just helping workers get through the day. They're just under the pump, mate.
I would hate to be part of
it. All right, so we've got a straw poll. One out of four is grumbling.
He's just miserable.
He's just grumpy.
He's just
they've got over foot row getting their ass kicked in the ground.
Yeah, hippie from Torquay that walks in the sandbag footy, he could be a bit more happy.
Yeah, it reminds me, I'd just like to do a call out to Jeff Hoy. Jeff used to be an official here in Victoria and ran his show with Annie for 4 years with Melissa McMillan, And I know Jeff's a listener. And
How do you know that? How do you know Jeff listens?
Yeah, how do you know he listens?
He just mentioned that he heard that you guys have labelled me the legend from Torquay.
I don't know what that
is. I'll tell you what.
So, Jeff, just a call out to Jeff. I know he wears the time that he was in office as a badge of honour, and I know the members respect him and appreciated his time in office. So, good on you, Jeff. All the best.
So, Dave, there's a bit happening in the seafaring space with revales and then also moving into the offshore wind legislation, mate.
Yeah.
Let us know what's going on.
There is. So, seafarers have to get revalidated. They have to revalidate their qualifications every 5 years, and that's it's come around to that anniversary at the moment. A lot of seafarers, well, COVID's again played its role here, are unemployed and have been unemployed for a period of time. There's a significant cost associated with revalidation. So the union, through their training, well, through a training centre that we're associated with, Metal in Western Australia, are offering funding to seafarers who have been unemployed for a significant period of time and can't afford it. So any seafarers out there in Victoria who need assistance with funding, reach out to me, reach out to the MUA, and we will do our best to hook you up.
And Dave, what's happening, and it's probably important if people do revalid, make sure they keep those up to date, because there was some pretty significant legislation that is either passed or pushing through Parliament now that could in a few years' time and after the establishment of an industry, create a whole heap of seafaring jobs.
I think we're in a very exciting time with regards to renewable energy. I think there's a recognition even from the fossil fuel industry that it is time. Even our Liberal government is recognising that it is time.
It's not for my government. None of this our business.
The Australian Liberal government. Anyway, they are starting to recognise the need for it, although a lot of it's probably bluff because they've got to...
No, it's all because there's an election in the wind.
It's election time.
There's an election
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you know what they announced today? That they're going to put money into a healthcare initiative for children. I don't mean that that's not a good thing. I just mean, what else are they going to say tomorrow?
Yeah. Bit of pork barreling.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, by it doesn't matter. The wind farm stuff, looks good.
Yeah, it is. And it's going to be really exciting. It's going to happen. I'm confident it's going to happen. I know we've been telling the members that for over 2 years. But
it's going to go for long. It's a while off. It's just a work in progress. But it's
the creation of an industry from nothing. So it's going to be massive.
And so the legislation is in front of government. The MUA have put several submissions into the government with concerns around that legislation. They're not massive concerns, but they are genuine concerns. One of them is around the safety regulator.
Yeah, certainly. So we want to make sure that it's not NOPSEMA, which is the offshore oil and gas operator.
Well, I think we've got that covered.
That's been sorted.
It's more that there'll be three different safety regulatory bodies involved in the process from getting the windmill from the wharf to the water to being constructed or fixed to the ocean floor. Yeah. So that's one area that they need to fix up. But I think everyone in the union movement, the ETU are massively behind it as well, believe let's get the legislation passed, even though it may be a little bit flawed. We want the legislation passed. We want the industry to have its chance to go forward. So,
yeah, and there's still plenty of exploration that needs to occur and wind mapping, I guess, like the Star of the South is doing now, that will have to occur. So there's still time to amend legislation and fix up the bumps and the run-through if we need to anyways, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, only I think 2 years ago we were just talking about the Star of the South, and in the last 12 months at least another 8 projects have jumped up behind it. And hate to say it, but Newcastle has stuck its head up proudly.
Well, hang on. So what do you hate to say that for? What's wrong with Newcastle?
Nothing. They've done a really great job in promoting the industry, and they've got a couple of projects that they're really pushing, and it's a great community up there.
You're angry that the Newcastle Beach is better than Torquay Beach, aren't you?
It's nowhere near as good. But there's plenty happening in that area, and I think... it's a little bit different, but the other part of the industry, the offshore industry that should grow is the...
Decommissioning.
Thank you, Aaron.
Yep. Yeah, that should be a fair bit of work out in the Bass Strait, pulling down all the old
platforms
and structures that have been used to exploit the gas fields.
And that was another, actually, that was another flaw with the offshore wind legislation, is that they put a lot of pressure on the renewable energy sector to put into their plans the removal of
they wanted funding the,
whereas the oil
the oil and gas people don't dismantle their rigs,
right?
They just leave them there
for the public to do something about it.
They drag them
somewhere and make an artificial reef, so
they could do that.
All right, thanks, Anders. Enjoy it.
Give it back.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.